Welcome to Essence, your weekly dose of Essence Magazine. I am Cherise Stevens, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today, I am reading articles from the Fall-Winter 2025 issue of Essence Magazine. Some of the articles I will be reading are Where Black Art Breathes, Moments That Transformed 2025. In these pages, we witnessed a year of Black artistry that moved hearts, shook stages, and reshaped the contours of possibility. By Okla Jones III and Shelby Stewart. There is a kind of beauty that comes only after the storm. Born of ruin, heavy with truth, luminous as a rain-washed sky. In the year of 2025, when the seams of the United States strained under the pull of its own contradictions, Black artists stitched together something new from the frayed ages. And the cloth they made, rich, unruly, iridescent, covered us in a warmth no winter could dim. We have been here before. We know what it is to create in the shadow of calamity, to turn scarcity into abundance, exile into sanctuary. But 2025 gave us a new vocabulary for survival, one that stretched across the wide spectrum of Black imagination. Across the country, art of every form became both refuge and rally. Painters, poets, dancers, and musicians alike carved out spaces for truth-telling. Galleries and museums swelled into sanctuaries. Theaters transformed into stages for confession. Streets became living canvases. And the most intimate rooms, the act of creation felt like ceremony. Perhaps this is what the Second Renaissance, if that's what we dare name it, has taught us, that art is not a luxury, not an afterthought in times of unrest, but the very ground we stand on when everything else crumbles. This year, Black artistry refused the script of despair. It chose instead to imagine us whole. Studio Museum in Harlem steps into its new era. Studio Museum in Harlem has long been a cornerstone of Black artistry. It's more than simply a gallery. It has championed works from across the diaspora, while serving as a hub for creativity and a living tribute to the historic neighborhood it has called home for nearly 60 years. In 2018, the museum closed its doors to embark on a bold reimagining that would expand its capacity for innovation and deepen its ties to the city. And on November 15, 2025, Studio Museum reopens to the world, renewing its mission to amplify artists of color. Founded in 1968, under the leadership of its inaugural director, Charles E. Innes, the museum was born into a nation in upheaval. The assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the height of the civil rights movement, and a surge of ingenuity all formed the backdrop to its beginnings. At a time of grief and resistance, Studio Museum emerged as both a sanctuary and a stage, reflecting the nation's hard truths, while illuminating Black brilliance. Fittingly, its home at 144 West 125th Street served as a bank in the early 1900s, where currency once flowed, cultural capital now circulates. With the museum investing in generations of artists and returning dividends to the community at large. What this new building represents for us is a new chapter in the museum's growth, says Thelma Golden, Ford Foundation Director and Chief Curator of the museum. She explains that when the repository initially moved to the location in 1968, the space was renovated to suit its needs. Though what architects called adaptive reuse, the process of taking an existing building and giving it new life. This is the first purpose-built museum in our history, Golden says. But in addition to being important to us for that reason, getting a building that will fully accommodate our audiences, our programs, our collection, it also represents the vision and the ambition of our founders to create a home for Black art in Harlem, that continues to narrate the story of the work of artists of African descent in the past, working deeply within our present, but also building toward a future. In many ways, Studio Museum has always functioned as a kind of time capsule, where artistic lineages converge and evolve. Its debut exhibition, Electronic Refractions 2, showcased the work of Tom Lloyd, an artist who boldly embraced the abstraction and technology at a time when Black artists were often expected to produce representational work. Now the museum returns with a major presentation of Lloyd's practice, bringing its history full circle. Alongside this, visitors will experience the first installment of a rotating display from the museum's renowned permanent collection. The reopened museum's inaugural programming also includes an exhibition of archival photographs and ephemera from its 57-year history, as well as a landmark presentation by more than 100 alumni of its Artist in Residence program. These alums were invited through an open call to submit new works on paper, a gesture Golden describes as a way to quite literally bless the walls of this new studio. The resulting presentation underscores the impact of generations of past residents while affirming the program's ongoing role in shaping the future of artists of African origin. Over the course of the museum's first year back, new site-specific commissions by Camille Normand, Christopher Myers, and Kapwani Kwanga will also be unveiled. Several iconic works closely tied to the building's legacy are set to return to the renovated location. Glenn Ligon's Give Us a Poem, 2007, will greet visitors upon their entrance in the lobby. Originally commissioned for the former building, the neon installation transforms an improvised verse by Muhammad Ali into a brilliant play of flashing light. On the second floor, Houston E. Conwell's The Joyful Mysteries, 1984, will be on display. This piece includes seven bronze time capsules containing sealed writings from luminaries such as Toni Morrison, Romare Bearden, and Eleanor Holmes Norton. One of the most recognizable symbols of the museum will also be reinstalled, David Hammond's Untitled, first installed in 2004. The piece reinterprets the American flag in the red, black, and green of Marcus Garvey's 1920s Pan-African design. Over the years, it has come to embody both the museum's message and its commitment to Black expression. It also recalls the social climate of the late 1960s, where the Studio Museum first opened with Lloyd's groundbreaking light sculptures, while holding a space for Black artists, many of whom were excluded from New York's leading cultural establishments at the time. It seems like a very incredibly important ideal to imagine if we could assemble a group of Tom Lloyd's works, to have that be the way that we not only honored the founding of the museum, but also brought his works into the conversation of this moment. Golden says, to introduce them to a new generation of viewers and to really lift up the work that several scholars have done over the years, continuing to think about him and his important contribution as an innovative artist working there in the late 60s through the 70s. That to open the building with an exhibition of these works would be a way not only to point at our past, but to cite Lloyd in the conversation of art in the present. Just as these works situate Studio Museum within a continuum of culture and political history, the museum's commitment to education underscores its role as a living resource for the people. Since its inception, when co-founder Betty Blayton Taylor first envisioned a space where Harlem's children could engage with art without leaving their neighborhood, knowledge has been central to its mission. Today, programs like Expanding the Walls, Making Connections Between Photography, History, and Community add to that legacy. And as the Education Center creates dedicated spaces for teens, families, and lifelong learners to fully engage with art and society. The next phase in Studio Museum's storied history marks more than the unveiling of a building. It signals a renewed commitment to shaping the future of art while honoring its past. With nearly 9,000 works in the museum's permanent collection, a $300 million capital campaign, and a list of exhibitions that have shifted the discourse of American art, this iconic structure is reemerging as a global model for institutions devoted to equity and imagination. Inspired by the form of Harlem's sidewalks, its new 82,000 square foot home expands the possibilities of how audiences will experience art and how artists will shape it. For Golden, it is important to reflect on the significance of this moment, not just for the city, but for the global art scene. Studio Museum is, to me, very much the tagline that we're using in all of our marketing, because it has always been a feeling that I have held about the museum, which is that the Studio Museum is home. It is where Black art lives, she says. I see the Studio Museum as a critical part of this story of writing history, reimagining narratives, creating space. Golden continues, that's why I feel so lucky to be the seventh leader of this institution, to be in this moment. What the Studio Museum means to me is what I think our founders imagined at the very beginning of a place, an institution that would center the vision and the voices of artists of African descent. Arts Guide, Amy Sherald, American Sublime. Amy Sherald has long celebrated the painting Black life from a unique lens. Her portraits, rendered in grayscale skin tones against vibrant fields of color, invite us to see her sitters, ordinary people, cultural icons, figures lost too soon, on their own terms. With American Sublime, the largest survey of her career to date, Sherald confirmed her place as one of the most important portraitists of her generation. But the exhibition, which recently concluded at the Whitney Museum of American Art after opening at SF MoMA, has also become something more, a lightning rod in the ongoing battle over which stories art institutions choose to tell. Spanning nearly two decades of work, American Sublime gathers close to 50 paintings, from early single-figure studies to more recent multi-figure compositions. Sherald's use of grayscale frees her subjects from reductive readings, while the saturated backdrops and stylized settings evoke a world where Black excellence is beautiful, during a moment when Black lives continue to be politicized. Sherald offers images that insist on presence, dignity, and depth. Sherald reclaims the word sublime to describe the fullness of Black humanity itself. Works like The Bathers, 2015, and Ecclesia, The Meeting of Inheritance and Horizons, 2024. Draw on European precedents while deliberately rewriting them, inserting Black figures into historical scenes from which they had long been excluded. This reclamation carries political weight, but Sherald renders it with softness that never loses sight of her sitter's individuality. Yet, American Sublime has also been marked by controversy. Earlier this year, Sherald withdrew the show from the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery after the museum raised concerns over one painting, Transforming Liberty, 2024, a portrait of a trans woman styled as the Statue of Liberty. Rather than allow the work to be contextualized away, or worse, removed, Sherald canceled the exhibition, citing censorship and institutional fear amid the current administration's hostility toward trans lives. The decision was historic. This would have been the first solo show by a Black woman at the National Portrait Gallery since its founding in 1968. Sherald's withdrawal reverberates beyond Washington. It forces us to ask, what does it mean for a museum to celebrate Black art while shying away from its complexities? How can institutions claim to champion inclusion if they cannot withstand political discomfort? These questions strike at the heart of today's cultural climate, where books are banned in schools, DEI programs are gutted, and artistic expression is attacked. In this landscape, the role of Black artists is essential. By representing Black Americans in moments of quiet reflection, joy, and ordinary being, Sherald resists the narrow scripts imposed on Black life. Her Michelle Obama portrait affirms elegance and modernity on a global stage. Her Breonna Taylor portrait insists on visibility in the face of injustice. Each painting becomes a counter-archive, a corrective to histories that have rendered so many unseen. You are listening to Essence with Sharice Stevens on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Continuing Black Art Breeds Moments That Transformed 2025, in the area of exhibitions, Giants art from the Dean Collection of Swiss Beats and Alicia Keys. Since its debut in 2024, Giants has traveled from Brooklyn to Atlanta to Minneapolis, leaving an indelible mark on each city it touches. The first major public exhibition of the couple's private collection, Giants celebrates Black diasporic artists through nearly 100 works spanning painting, photography, sculpture, and mixed media. The title itself speaks volumes, referring to both the towering and reputations of figures like Gordon Parks, Jean-Michel Basquiat, and Lorna Simpson, and the monumental scale of works by contemporary visionaries such as Derek Adams, Miliko Mogosi, Mikaline Thomas, Nina Chanel Abney, and Titus Kaphar. As much as cultural movement as an exhibition, Giants reflects the Dean's ethos of artist supporting artists, forging deep relationships with creators and amplifying their voices on a global stage. Elizabeth Catlett, a Black revolutionary artist and all that it implies. Elizabeth Catlett's landmark retrospective brings one of the 20th century's most uncompromising voices to the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., the very city that shaped the artist's formative years, featuring more than 150 works across sculpture, printmaking, painting, and drawing. The exhibition, which ran from March 9, 2025 through July 6, 2025, illuminated Catlett's decades-long career as an artist activist who refused to separate her craft from her politics. From the poignant Lino cut, Sharecropper, melding African-American and Mexican campesino iconography, to the marble bust Naima, My Granddaughter, Catlett's art brings geographies, histories, and cultures. Organized in collaboration with the Brooklyn Museum and the Art Institute of Chicago, the show underscored Catlett's deep commitment to racial, gender, and economic justice, as well as her belief in art's role as a tool for liberation. Rashid Johnson, A Poem for Deep Thinkers. In Rashid Johnson, A Poem for Deep Thinkers, which runs through January 18, 2026, the Guggenheim Spiraling Rotunda is transformed into both a gallery and a stage for one contemporary art's most important voices. For nearly three decades, Johnson has woven history, philosophy, literature, and music into a body of work that's as intellectually rigorous as it is visually striking. Nearly 90 of his pieces fill the museum. They range from his signature black soap paintings and spray-painted text works to immersive film, video, and large-scale sculpture. At the pinnacle of this space sits Sanguine, a monumental site-specific installation with an embedded piano ready to host live performances that bridge visual art and sound. Superfine, Tailoring Black Style. With Superfine Tailoring Black Style, the Costume Institute of New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art delivers a three-century journey through the history of Black dandyism. On view through October 26, 2025, and the theme of this year's Met Gala, the exhibition examines how self-presentation has served as both a form of resistance and a declaration of identity within the African diaspora. Inspired by Monica L. Miller's seminal text, Slaves to Fashion, the show unfolds across 12 sections, including champion, respectability, heritage, beauty, cosmopolitanism, and more, each revealing a distinct facet of this aesthetic tradition. Viewers encounter everything from 18th century garments to contemporary looks by Black designers. There are also paintings, photographs, and decorative arts by artists including Turquoise Dyson, Tanda Francis, Andre Grenard Matswa, and Tyler Mitchell. These works trace dandyism's evolution from Enlightenment-era England to the runways of New York, London, and Paris, illuminating its fusion of African and European style codes. Curated by Andrew Bolton with Miller as guest curator, Superfine positions elegance, tailoring, and flair, not as vanity, but as visionary tools, ways Black men and women have long fashioned themselves into symbols of power, beauty, and cultural possibility. The Lost World, The Art of Minnie Evans. A few days ahead of Thanksgiving, Atlanta's High Museum of Art honors one of America's most visionary and under-recognized artists with The Lost World, The Art of Minnie Evans, opening on November 14, 2025, and running through April 12, 2026. Before embarking on a national tour, this landmark exhibition brings together more than 100 of Evans' drawings, from her early spare works of the 1930s to the vivid, dreamlike mandalas that defined her later career. Born in 1892 in rural North Carolina, Evans spent years working as a gatekeeper at Wilmington's Airlie Gardens. The experience infused her art with vibrant floral motifs and tropical color. In 1975, Evans became one of the first Black artists to have a solo exhibition at the Whitney Museum of American Art. With The Lost World, the High not only introduces her to the new generation, but reframes her place in global surrealism, revealing how her lived experiences, rooted in the South, yet universally expansive, shaped a body of work that will stand the test of time. The Genesis Facade Commission. Jeffrey Gibson, The Animal That Therefore I Am. Jeffrey Gibson's The Animal That Therefore I Am marks a major moment for the acclaimed artist, who made history last year as the first Indigenous artist to represent the United States with a solo show at the Venice Biennale. Opening on September 12 as part of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's 2025 Genesis Facade Commission, the exhibition will run through June 9, 2026. It features four large-scale figurative sculptures installed on the Met's iconic Fifth Avenue exterior, drawing on Gibson's signature fusion of Indigenous worldviews, vibrant abstraction, text, and color. The works invite reflection on the interconnectedness of all living beings and the environment. A member of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians and of Cherokee descent, Gibson has a multidisciplinary practice that spans painting, performance, film, and curation. His work often challenges the stereotypical ways in which Indigenous culture has been represented. This commission marks the sixth facade project at the Met. It runs alongside Gibson's first solo exhibition in France. This is dedicated to the one I love, opening in October at Hauser and Worth, Paris. In theater, Ragtime. Ragtime returns to Broadway this fall, bringing its sweeping portrait of American turn-of-the-century struggles back to the stage with fresh urgency. Opening September 26, 2025, and playing through January 4, 2026 at Lincoln Center's Vivian Beaumont Theater, this revival sees Tony Award nominee Joshua Hendry step into the role of Cole House Walker Jr., a proud Black pianist whose fight for justice lies at the heart of the story. When it premiered in 1998, Ragtime's original cast featured two icons of the theater, Audra McDonald, who won her second Tony for her portrayal of Sarah, and Brian Stokes Mitchell as Cole House. Adapted from E.L. Doctorow's novel, the musical interweaves the lives of African Americans, Eastern European immigrants, and wealthy white Americans, against the backdrop of historical figures such as Booker T. Washington and Evelyn Nesbitt. With its soaring score, layered characters, and timeless themes of justice, equality, and the American dream, Ragtime remains a theatrical masterpiece. Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater Holiday Season. Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater is back at the New York City Center with a historic five-week holiday engagement that ushers in a new chapter under artistic director Alicia Graf Mack, joined by Associate Artistic Director Matthew Rushing. Mack honors Ailey's legacy with dynamic revivals while expanding the company's reach through daring premieres. The new season, from December 3, 2025 through January 4, 2026, features five world premieres, each a celebration of innovation and storytelling. Frederick Earl Mosley's Embrace, a soulful meditation on human connection, set to music by Adele, Stevie Wonder, and Ed Sheeran. Meja Garcia's Jazz Island, an Afro-Caribbean folktale inspired by Jeffrey Holder. Matthew Neenan's exuberant company debut. Jamar Roberts' Song of the Anchorite, a modern reimagining of Ailey's 1961 Hermit Songs, and The Holy Blues, a spirited blend of gospel and blues by Jawal Wila Joe Zolar, with Samantha Friggins and Shalvar Monteiro. In live music, Kendrick Lamar's Super Bowl halftime performance. On February 9, 2025, Kendrick Lamar took center stage for one of the most watched gigs in the world, a Super Bowl halftime show, and turned in something far more than a performance. Following the critical and commercial triumph of GNX, which claimed the title of the longest-running number one on Billboard's Top Rap Albums chart, 22 weeks, Lamar entered the Caesars Superdome with the weight of his legacy and the eyes of millions upon him. GNX had become a cultural lightning rod before the show even began. Its fearless lyricism, complex production, and raw honesty struck a chord with the industry and listeners alike. But beyond the music itself, the album reignited one of rap's most intense rivalries, Lamar's ongoing, very public clash with Drake. That feud, splashed across headlines and social media timelines, sparked fierce debates around authenticity, artistic integrity, and what it means to hold space at hip-hop's most exclusive table. Lamar's halftime performance blurred the line between cultural statement and artistic manifesto. On stage, Samuel L. Jackson appeared as Uncle Sam, in a costume drawn from the early 20th century recruitment posters, but altered with 16 stars pinned to his lapel, a subtle nod to Kendrick's lyric in Whacked Out Murals. Against a backdrop of West Coast street tableau and shifting silhouettes, Lamar moved through a set list that stitched together the urgency of regionalism with the intimacy of confession. Each beat carried the density of Black history and the contradictions of American life, folding decades of West Coast hip-hop lineage into a performance that still felt unmistakably forward-looking. You have been listening to Essence, with readings from the Fall-Winter 2025 issue of Essence magazine. I am Charisse Stevens, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great day.